This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more, this is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
To save you money, they update because customer service means everything to them. They are great people who are great pros, all at Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. We open the show today with my good friend John Sauber from the Center Daily Times. John, first of all, how have you been?
I have been delightful, Steve. I actually just got back from a week of vacation, did some golfing, and can't really ask for much more.
Well, congratulations, by the way, in the single-digit handicap. That's fabulous.
There is no chance that that is true. But you know, we live in the high 20s.
Okay. Well, hey, at least you're out there having fun and doing it.
That's right.
Penn State had an opportunity for people to at least talk. You know, you had a chance to talk to coaches last week. Live for Life happened as well. I know this all works around your vacation. But what's the general read that you get when you went through the comments that were made in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, so it was interesting. We talked to James last Thursday, as you mentioned. We talked to the assistants right after that, which, like you said, was a nice little send-off before I went. But I thought there was a lot of confidence from the various assistants that I spoke to in their specific position groups. But it was rather calm, though. You know what I mean? Like, there was nobody was worried about a position group. Nobody was expressing concern over things. James was relatively run of the mill. There was no major storyline coming out of anything. So I thought it feels like everything is flying under the radar, I guess, a little bit more this offseason than maybe in off seasons past.
And when you look at that, you know, because it was very businesslike, I think that's the best way I thought of it. When you look at that and everybody is taking that kind of attitude, especially the under the radar part, how much does it benefit, especially now with a 12-team playoff, that you enter in a little bit under the radar?
Yeah, I honestly think that's huge for this team this year, right? Because you look at a lot of the main figures in the program this year, there are a lot of stress points and a lot of pressures that a lot of these guys are facing that, if they were more under the microscope, could get overwhelming, right? Like, you talk about someone like Drew Aller, who was really good last year, and especially for a first-time starter, he's going into a year that it maybe is not make or break for him, but where people have really high expectations for him. And him in this program not being so pressured to be, you know, one of the top four teams, I think will really help him and other guys on the team kind of be themselves and play how they play without the expectations that, okay, it's got to be 12-0, 11-1 at worst. You know, I do think a 10-2 team will make the playoff. I said earlier this offseason that I thought a 9-3 team might end up making the playoffs. So not having the stress of needing to win every single game, of course they're going to want to, of course they're going to try to, but not having that as, you know, everything is make or break, I think will really help this program this year.
John, how intrigued are you? Because the schedule is going to be different. You have a UCLA, Washington, USC games. They're all conference games along the way. How intrigued are you by that?
Yeah, it's still really strange, right? Like, I look at the schedule and I'm used to, you know, the Pac-12 and you know, there being a Power 5, and you look and you see those teams on the schedule and it just feels different, right? It'll be cool, I think, for fans from Penn State, you know, and other programs too, to see these kind of matchups. But that first game against UCLA will be the first one for Penn State against one of these programs, and I'll be curious to see what it's kind of like, right? How UCLA deals with the cross-country travel, and then how Penn State deals with it not long after that, heading to USC. So I think the travel is the biggest question mark here, and how it's going to impact how these teams play, because we see it in the NFL, but you know, there's more time to travel before a game in the NFL, right? You have more leeway to get out there. This is not really like that, and it's not like bowl games, because bowl games, guys have a chance, you know, to be, like for the Rose Bowl, they're out there for a week, right, if not more, to adjust their body clocks to the time. This is, you're in and you're out. It's a business trip.
Right, no question about that. People have talked about the wide receivers, you know, and let's face it, I mean, it's a proper talking point. How do you view them and the pressure on them heading into the season? And when you had a chance to talk to Marcus Hagans, what was your thought there?
Yeah, I thought Marcus handled himself really well, as he always does, and he did a good job of explaining how, yes, they hear all that noise, right, that you mentioned, that it's this talking point. They all hear it. They're human. Of course they hear it, but they use that to motivate them, right? And they use it to channel it properly. And he even talked about how he gets it motivates him, because he doesn't want to be talked about as like a weak point of the team or anything like that. He wants to be, you know, one of the reasons that and he wants the position group to be one of the reasons that the program is finding success. So I thought he had kind of channeled all that stuff properly. You know, we talked to him about guys like Julian Fleming, who obviously is the big addition that everyone will point to, replacing Keandre Lambert-Smith in some ways as the veteran in the room. I'll be curious to see what his role ends up looking like, but I think there's no doubt that his role off the field has been pretty big. He mentioned when I sat down for a one-on-one with him that Liam Clifford has also stepped up in a leadership mm-hmm. role, but I think part of that probably happened because Fleming is facilitating that, right? He's creating a culture in that room. That's going to be really big, because they have a ton of talent in the room, especially younger guys that I think need to take a step forward. But they also have someone in Trey Wallace who has been really good when he's played. He's just got to stay healthy like Fleming does, and I think they have a shot to be really impactful this year. Now, what does that mean? You know, is it putting together a 1,000-yard season for anyone? Probably not, but I think that, you know, Wallace could have a relatively big year and I think could vault himself into – you know, higher round draft status than he has been previously. But all in all, this group, I think, has to, as a whole, improve. Everyone has to take steps forward on their own, and it can't just be one guy stepping up, because then you're just drawing the attention of them and the rest of the group is still falling behind. So I think there needs to be that the tide has to rise across the board, and they have to get improvement pretty much out of everyone.
John, what about the coordinator part of it, with Andy Koltunicki coming in, Tom Allen, Justin Lustig? That's all three coordinators. I don't know if you're looking for anything dramatic, but what are some of the subtle things that you're looking for out of all three phases?
Yeah, I think with the offense, it's how are the team's best players maximized? To me, that is Drew Allard, that is Catron Allen, that is Nick Singleton, and that's Tyler Warren and Trey Wallace, right? Like, those are the guys that you want to see put in a position to succeed if you're a Penn State fan. And I am assuming, based on the way that Koltunicki has spoken, both, you know, in the availability last week and when I sat down with them, that is the emphasis, right? It's about prioritizing the team's best players and getting them the ball and giving them a chance to succeed. And I know it sounds simple and obvious, but I don't know that was always the case last year, especially, you know, at the midpoint of the season. But I think that will be the case moving forward, and that's important. As far as the defense, I think this is, to me anyways, a little bit more of a shift than maybe some will expect. This is, mm-hmm. to me, a true 4-2-5, right? That line position that the Tom Allen used to call the Husky when he was at Indiana is mm-hmm. more of a safety than it is a linebacker. I know it's a safety linebacker hybrid, but I would look for that position to have more safety responsibilities than typical linebacker ones. It'll allow Penn State to play its three best at safety and move those guys around and get their best 11 on the field. As far as special teams, I'm just interested to see, you know, how these things shake out with the kicker competition, right? Like, that is that you have to replace Alex Falcons, and you need to find someone reliable out there, because those points can really matter down the stretch of games, especially when you anticipate some of these big games being close.
All right, so, you know, you have people that are established in the program, they're established playmakers in the program. Do you have a couple of guys on each side of the ball that subtly, maybe under the radar, that can be contributors and help make this a really successful season beyond the guys that are in the, quote, the star category?
Yeah, I think Caden Saunders is someone on offense mm-hmm. especially that really stands out to me, right? He came in with the hype, five-star talent, maybe didn't see it you know, turning to production right away, but you've seen improvements there, especially last year. I thought there were flashes of him being a legitimate starter for this team, and he's someone in the slot that can be really dynamic. He's a really good athlete, and is stronger, I think, than he probably gets credit for. He's the guy on offense that I think if he takes a step forward, it can really transcend what this offense is going to do and can be really impactful. As far as the defense, KJ Winston's the obvious guy that gets all the attention at safety, as he should. He's very good. I think he's going to be a first-round pick. But Zaki Wheatley is someone that I think will really benefit from playing in Tom Allen's system, right? Like, I think he's probably that third safety and someone that can, you know, really be a playmaker on the ball. You know, when it goes up, he goes and gets it, and he goes and finds it. He's you know, not shy as a tackler either, which I think has been a problem at safety for different programs around the country. But I don't think Penn State has that issue at all with Winston, Wheatley, and Reed. But, yeah, those two guys in particular stand out to me as they can kind of really – I expect them to contribute. If they go from contributing to, you know, being a, you know, just below a star-level player, I think you could have a big impact on Penn State this year.
All right, so moving forward, money, of course, is always going to be a big part of this. We'll do this in several phases. Let's start with the Beaver Stadium expansion – or not expansion, the renovation part of it. What is your thought – now, I know there are only a couple of renderings out there, but what's your thought on that moving forward?
Yeah, I think it's desperately needed, right? Like, I think the aesthetic – I know some people like the steel beams and the structure itself, but I think for a while the stadium has needed – something to make it look not even more modern, but more less like just a construction project, right? Like less make it look more appealing, quite frankly, for people that are coming into town and looking at it. So I think that is it's you know, desperately needed. I think we all know that the improvements and the structure and everything like that are needed, right? Like, it's just got to be you know, in a position where there aren't going to be maintenance needs moving forward. I'll be curious to see what it ends up looking like, what capacity ends up being and everything like that. But I think it's smart to, I mean, I know not all fans will want to hear this, but I think it's probably smart to prioritize the revenue because we are heading toward revenue sharing and programs are going to need increased sources of revenue moving forward.
Well, you're talking about $22 million, you know, just as a starting number. In the next 10 years, it could reach $30 million in terms of revenue sharing, which now brings up the next one. The NCAA basketball tournament is looking at two models right now, one to expand to 72, the other one to 76. Keep in mind that part of the House settlement is that NCAA distributions are going to be reduced somewhat to schools across the board. Is this a potential to make up for that by expanding the tournament?
I think that is, if not the motivating factor, it's got to be one of the motivating factors, right? I personally love the tournament. I love college basketball. I'm not one to complain about adding, you know, 4 to 8 teams or whatever it ends up being, just because it does increase some of that upset potential, some of the fun, some of the reason we all love March Madness. I do think it can get to a point where it's too much, right? I don't want to see 128 teams or anything like that in the NCAA tournament. But, yeah, I think this is... You know, there are going to be things like this that we notice probably over the next few years that the NCAA does to kind of increase that revenue. We're seeing it with the, you know, with the potential for sponsorships and stadiums and logos and everything like that on the field. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see more stuff like that moving forward.
Yeah, because, I mean, look, if they were to do what the – remember there was the committee and they made a recommendation, and they recommended that all NCAA championships outside of the college football playoff have 25% participation. Well, in the NCAA basketball tournament, that'd be 90 schools. And I'm with you, John. That's way too many. 72 to 76, I could live with it, and I could live with it for the reasons that they're talking about. And I would just say, just do 76 now, because that way you don't just mess around and then do it later. Might as well just do it right out of the gate. But that's how I view it.
Yeah, I think that would be, it does feel like something that if they go to 72, that they will inevitably just go to 76 anyways. I think you're 100% right? Just rip the Band-Aid off now, go to 76, and don't, you know, mess with it and realize, oh, you know, it should have been 4 more teams than we originally planned, and then inevitably do it anyways. I think it's better to just do it right away, like you said, and get there and be done with it.
Yeah, I mean, and again, it's all about revenue. And now we get to logos on the field. How do you feel about logos on the field, which looks like it's going to happen based on what they've done? And they have not done anything yet about doing the logo on the jersey of some sort, like the NBA. Well, everybody does it. The Yankees have Star Insurance, for goodness sakes. You know, the Celtics are Vistaprint. The Mavericks are Chime. How do you view that in this current climate?
Yeah, I think the on the field was kind of inevitable, right? It's an obvious way to draw in a lot of revenue, but not be too obstructive, right? Like, I don't think we're going to see them everywhere. I think the way that it's currently set out to have one big one and two kind of smaller ones is good and kind of makes it more subtle and less of a hindrance on what you're looking at. The jersey stuff, I'm kind of surprised it hasn't gotten there already. Like you said, there are professional teams doing this everywhere. Soccer's been doing this, you know, for a long time. I think teams, and this is probably not a consideration, but maybe it should be when teams agree to these things, there really should be more effort put into making sure that the color scheme of the company matches your company or matches your own color scheme, right? Like you want this to look normal and natural. I remember when the Sixers first got the StubHub logo on theirs that you kind of didn't even notice it because it just blended right in. And so I think that has to be or should be a priority, at this, especially for the aesthetic of everything.
Yeah, the only one I've seen that doesn't do that is Love's Truck Stops, and that's the Oklahoma City Thunder. And that's because of the big yellow heart. Okay. I mean, that's the one I think of. Like, okay, that's a little bold. So, hey, we're at that point now. That's where this is. How do you, just in general, John, this is all being mandated by court settlements, so I got that part. But how do you feel about the new model of college sports moving forward?
Yeah, I think it's probably necessary at this point, right, to be in a place where it's treated more professionally, because I think in some ways it's always teetered toward more professionally than amateur, especially with the amount of hours guys put in, right? Like these, and you know, men and women in college sports are putting in full-time jobs, right? Essentially, as you know, when you talk about practice and treatment and training and everything like that, that you're putting in a ton of time. And so I think it was kind of inevitable for this to happen. It's probably best that it happens quickly. That way there's less chance for the NCAA to get involved and mess things up, right? Like you can kind of create a more sustainable model that feels like something that can be that can last for a while. I am curious to see, is, you know, transfer portals inevitably the windows get abolished and guys can, and men and women can transfer whenever they want, that what it looks like when, you know, if someone enters the portal in, say, late September, early October, like, do they join the next program right away? Like, how does that work with scholarships and everything? So I'm curious to see what it ends up looking like. But yeah, I think it became increasingly clear in recent years that this was inevitable and probably the quicker the better, so it can become, so people can get adjusted, right? Because when you can kind of take care of all of it at once and be like, hey, this is what it's going to look like, I think people can then dive back in and understand it a little better.
I think we're teetering toward contracts, which would prevent what you're talking about.
I think that's a potential here that I think everyone is probably monitoring at this point.
Yeah, and the other part about 72 versus 76, remember, there's no Pac-12. All the major conferences have expanded. That means only one automatic bid has been lost. And because of that, the power conferences are now looking at, saying, hey, wait a minute. For example, Oregon doesn't make the NCAA tournament last year, right? Because they got the automatic bid. Colorado would have been teetering. You may have two power conference teams that wouldn't make the tournament under the current 68 structure because the Power Five is now the Power Four and condensed.
Yeah, and I think the one thing that I have seen, rightfully so, get the most pushback with this is the idea of, I've seen some, I think it was, as there's been coaches that have said that there shouldn't be automatic bids. That is the one thing that should absolutely never go away with the NCAA tournament. That is part of what makes it fun. Nobody wants to see 76 Power 4 teams, you know what I mean, inevitably making the NCAA tournament. We want those types of mid-majors, those low majors, having that shot.
You are so right. John, always a pleasure. Glad you had a great vacation. Glad you took time to talk with us today.
Thank you, Steve. Always appreciate it.
John Sauber, Center Daily Times. This half hour brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Spring has sprung, and it's time to dust off those insurance policies. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855 or visit our website at purdyinsurance.com to see what we can do for you.